My name is Steve Krakoka. I'm a professor emeritus, now retired from The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, Steve, you talked about strains of PEDV and genomics and PDCV infection and how that relates to control of PEDV.
Well, that's a $64,000 question is, okay, now that we have PEDV disease and Delta is coming, now that we have them here, we have to deal with, for lack of a better word, a barn that's on fire. Before they got here, we could have put out the fire because it didn't exist. Now that it's here, we've got to deal with it. So we've got to develop products kind of on the run, hoping that one or more of them will work. And what I tried to do in this talk is to suggest ways to approach this in a global way, from a distance, that I think we want a combination, for example, in PED, a parenteral and oral product, and we need a combination product to stimulate both arms of the immune response. I think probably modified live virus is ultimately going to be the answer to this, but that's a year or two away from here. Meanwhile, we have to deal with this disease on the ground right now. Certainly the swine people, the experts at BI and elsewhere, can advise producers and veterinarians on biosecurity, and that's all incredibly important. And for example, this morning Bob Morrison talked about risk factors and statistics, how size of farm and proximity to the farms determines the risk of whether or not you'll get the disease, and that's all incredibly important to know. And that all comes back to biosecurity. So between now and when a safe and effective vaccine is available, our only option is to grit our teeth and practice good high-level biosecurity.
You spent a lot of time talking about diarrhea. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's part of the name of
yes.
PED. But other big diseases also exhibit diarrhea. And so you talked about kind of what's the major difference here between okay. PED and other diseases.
Well, you're right. I mean, diarrhea is one of the most common manifestations of infectious disease and, frankly, diet-related disease, certainly in domestic animals, and probably globally as well. Enteric disease is a big deal. So what's the difference? Well, you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it and say, well, in one sense, it's really no different than other sources of diarrhea. Diarrhea is defined as excess fluid enteric materials leaving the GI tract at an accelerated speed, volume, rate, etc. So, yes, it is diarrhea just like other diarrheas. The difference is in the species we're dealing with here, which is a young piglet, which is essentially 100% susceptible to the fatal dehydrating effects of this diarrhea. And so what you're dealing with is instant high mortality within 2 to 3 days. Now, this same phenomenon, you see it with rotavirus in the developing world, human norovirus infections in the developing world. You don't hear about it, but it's there. It's the same phenomenon of diarrhea. Why you're hearing about it here is this is a high morbidity, high mortality diseases, infections, in a food animal species that has high visibility and that virtually everybody is invested in one way or the other, whether you're commodities brokers, whether you're farmers, whether you're the consuming public, whether you're marketing, whether you own supermarket chains, whether you make hot dogs and on, everybody's invested in this thing, and it all begins with a 220 to 240-pound live pig going to slaughter, and if there are no pigs going to slaughter, then what we're dealing with, increased prices. This is the classic capitalist issue. And frankly, there'll be farms that'll be going out of business or shut down. Prices will go up, which will squeeze a number of people, reduce another source of protein for low and moderate income families. This is a mess all around, not to mention the fact that the pigs are dying. I mean, creating really environmental health hazards and all the other sorts of things that people that are not associated with agriculture seem to be concerned about. Now, the real issue is ensuring our food supply, maintaining our food supply, and maintaining the health, safety, and mental stability of those in our population that are providing this food to us for well below market value.
We mentioned a respiratory component may be involved. That's something I hadn't heard of before.
That's true, and I hope you don't hear of it. And the reason I brought it up is that in our experimental system, I have some histologic evidence of a pulmonary component. We know that Delta Corona, and we're speaking of Delta Coronas primarily, we know Delta coronavirus virus is found not just in the GI tract. It's a systemic disease in blood, lung, liver, kidney, et cetera. So we know that these pigs are viremic and sick. The worry that I have is a respiratory component, because that provides another method of spread, i.e. infective aerosols. And the worry for me is with a little bit of mutation, these could be infectious for other species and perhaps including ourselves. And so I think of the MERS and the SARS epidemics. These are bat origin viruses that presumably, I think, replicate in camels as their natural host, and then somehow get into the indigenous human population and kills them. And so, and again, by mutation and adaption. And the question you have to ask yourself, a fellow who has camels in the Middle East probably lives and sleeps with a camel, not unlike many of the swine producers live and sleep, that's not the right word, live and breathe their production units. And so is it likely? No. Do I hope it not happens? Most assuredly not. But I felt at least with this audience I would raise the possibility so that, A, if it occurs, we can identify it early, and B, if it occurs in you and yours, you will have had the foresight to wear a mask and prevent it.
Good thought there. Now, you already mentioned this vaccinations, because, of course, we have no cure for this, and that's right now we're just working on prevention and hoping right. that it doesn't spread. And you already mentioned this, but let's go again. What you think is the best option for a vaccination?
Okay. Well, there are a lot of options. And philosophically, the best approach, in my view, is to look at pigs and ask ourselves, what did the pigs do that survived this disease that allowed them to survive, and to mimic that? Okay. In other words, let the pig make the choices for us rather than to outthink Mother Nature. That's a difficult thing to do in the face of an epidemic. Now, we have some shortcuts. We can look at injectable products, and we know the history of those, and they're frankly not very good. Okay. We know the oral products are frankly not very good either. Because we've been brainwashed to think that to simulate a local mucosal immune response, we have to present the antigen orally. That's not right, okay? So clearly, if you're going to use an inactivated or killed product, the best thing to do is to use a combination oral and parenteral vaccination. And we could, and I'm certain that BI and other vaccine companies are looking at this, and I'm thinking what they're thinking is what they want to do is probably stimulate immune response in sows during mid-gestation with oral vaccinations, maybe two or three shots of that. 2 weeks before farrowing, give them a booster shot so you get high IgG levels in colostrum at the time of delivery. I think that's where they want to go. And that would be ideally a modified live product is the best one to use, because modified live will do the thinking for you. It will replicate the disease to a slower rate in the pig and allow the pig then to make the proper response. The net effect of that black box is an avirulent virus and immune host. And if we don't get hung up on how did that happen and just let that process happen as they did in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, that's what's going to work. It's low tech. No one wants to hear about using old technologies that, by the way, work.
Well, your final words to this group here in North Carolina was about feeding swine byproducts,
yeah.
And you had a pretty strong opinion about that.
I do, and this goes back we're not only intrinsically stupid. Why would you feed a susceptible animal species? Reject materials from that same animal species that could be filled with God knows what. Why would you even contemplate that as an idea? But even worse than that, we've already done the experiment with the mad cow BSE outbreak in the early 90s in Great Britain. Recall that we made protein extract products for cattle, and we fed it to them, and guess what? We succeeded in facilitating transmission of BSE among cattle and killed somewhere around 200 Brits that had the misfortune to have the rare mutation that permitted the prion to replicate in their brain. Okay, so that should tell you that we don't do that anymore. And apparently, as a species, we're not capable of remembering anything, or certainly not translating it, because if you go on the internet and on the web and look through the literature, you'll find all sorts of people claiming that they can sterilize porcine protein extract products such that they're sure there's no infectious disease in there. I would like to see if they'd want to bet their own children on that, because I sure wouldn't, because I know better. And it only takes one mistake, one inattention to detail, to turn that from a cheap source of protein to the best source of infectious inoculum that you could ever imagine. My question is why does the industry even permit this? And I guess the industry didn't think about it at the time because they were assured by these producers of this protein extract that everything was great. Well, right up until it wasn't. So I'm appalled, and I'm certain that that will be addressed in the future.
All right. Well, very interesting information here at the Boehringer Ingelheim North Carolina Swine Health Seminar. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.